Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Killing Goblins on another beautiful day that ends in a Y. I'm Dragonus, and this is Oshi.
Hi, guys.
And you'd think after doing this for as long as we have been, I would feel less awkward introducing the episodes.
I don't. And I always feel like it's the weird, most like awkward thing to introduce yourself over and over again. I don't even know. We could make a recording and just use that.
No, we really couldn't. That would be much worse.
Okay, so today is all about doctors?
Yeah, today is in fact all about doctors.
We're going to do a full retread of the origin of Geneva Scala, the doctor.
Yep, it's time for the Geneva chapters, of which there is only two in this book, but they're doozies.
Yeah, they're dense and dark and a lot. So before we go diving into the darkness, let's do some lighter fare. How are you, Dragonus? How's your week been?
It's been long.
Really? That's all you got? Long.
I mean, it's just a lot of stuff at work. Perpetual like desire to just get up and walk out and just, you know, I like my job, but I also hate my job. Been very busy. I've not really had time for anything else, and when I did have time for other things, it was taking those online classes.
I was just going to ask, how is the online classes going?
Also boring, because it's at the very, very beginning of it, so, you know, it's a lot of just general overview and basic questions and summarizing the summary of the summary to summarize what you'll be summarizing as you go to read the book. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, just the start of something, but it could be exciting, yeah. Too. I mean, it's something new.
Also, I had a huge oof. My car has been in the shop for a bit, and I left the Temple of Elemental Evil book for the game that I'm running in my car, so I had to just make up a whole session on the spot. That was fun.
I mean, okay. I guess I'm in a positive, buoyed mood because I just ate something. And food always makes me happy. It's probably
that's probably why I'm always so grumpy. I always wait to eat till after the podcast.
This is what you've seen me eat before the podcast. The whole reason I do it is so that I'm in a good mood.
Well, no, I don't like to eat anything substantive before I know I'm going to be talking for a while.
Oh, I see. Is that like a physical thing, or what's going on there? Yeah. Okay. Cool. I guess my week has been a bit of a disaster. I was telling Dragonus about it. Most of it I cannot talk about because I can't talk about it, but it's been the kind of week where I feel useful. I know bad stuff's been happening, but I genuinely feel like I'm doing something. And that's not even including my day job stuff. Like, my part-time job is just like taking up more time, and I enjoy doing it. The chapters have been nice. The last two chapters that came out from Pirate for the ninth volume. Yes, Dragonus, that's your cue to talk.
Sorry, what was the question?
Oh boy.
I spaced out there for a second. No, just repeat the last like four words you said.
I love you so much. No, I was just talking about like how the last couple of chapters the pirate has written have been really, really good.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a degree of emotionally draining to be found in like these last couple of chapters, but they have the sauce.
I don't find them emotionally draining. That's exactly why I enjoyed them so much. They felt exhilarating to me. I guess that's different ways. Like, I live off the drama, so...
I mean, I can live off the drama. The drama can, I guess, sustain me, but the drama as presented in those last few chapters hit too close to home, if nothing else.
Oh, okay, that's different. When it's like that, you know, it gets there. You never know where to go for it. I've mostly been, like, obsessively watching the news coming out of the UK recently. as a way to distract myself. And it's all about Liz Truss. Do you know who Liz Truss is? She's the prime minister.
No, I'm not familiar with her.
So the UK has gone through like a Boris Johnson, the orange fuckwad, the Trump of the UK, got kicked out, because of course he did after a lot of scandals. And 100,000 people, conservatives, chose the next leader of the next prime minister of the UK, which is like 18 million people. And these are the 100,000 most conservative people in the country choosing the Conservative Party leader. And she her the first thing she did is said that she's gonna cut taxes and borrow a whole fuckwad of money to fund it all. And then she's also gonna cut services. This after a pandemic slash Brexit. And it created one of the worst financial crises in recent history for the UK, and it's not going away. And on top of that, they are going through energy crisis, and like the IMF has literally put out a statement saying that the UK is now a textbook, is acting like a textbook developing nation. Okay, let's be real. They're just saying you're a third world dumbass. It's both hilarious and horrifying to watch, because imagine that happens if Trump gets back into. I don't want to talk about politics too much. I should please cut that part out. Please cut that. Imagine that happens in the United States. Like we come into some kind of huge cycle of horrifying stuff, and it's so. I don't know why I find it fascinating. For the first time, I find this kind of like outside. I understand what people think of the United States when they look at our politics and our social structure, and they're like, "What the fuck is going on?"
I don't know. I think that like that's greatly overstated. And honestly, the UK is currently in the middle of like what I can only describe as a midlife goddamn crisis for countries. Scotland's probably sad they didn't get out when they had the chance. And
Oh, you don't. Oh, that's even the best part. So they had their elections and they re-elected the person who's like who promises to do another referendum. So there's a decent chance Scotland may still leave the UK.
yeah, I'm not surprised.
I think it was literally announced like yesterday or today or something that they're gonna hold another referendum in 2023.
No, and it'll be interesting to see how the UN responds to that because right now the UN is currently putting its fingers in its ears and going la 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 every time like the Catalan region of Spain gets mentioned. But if they let Scotland break away and join the EU, then they're gonna have to come to fucking Jesus with this Catalan thing.
Wait, you're talking about the UK or the UN? Why would the UN have anything to do with Scotland leaving the UK?
Because if Scotland leaves the UK, the UN would then have to decide whether or not to give them membership.
Oh, why would that be a problem?
Are you familiar with like the Catalan region of Spain?
I am familiar with it, but
And how
Scotland
they have
would.
been trying to like a whole like follow up on their referendums that they've had and get up and walk away from Spain for a while. And like the UN has just had its fingers in its ears going la 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 la, this isn't happening.
Yeah, but I always thought that that Spain, the country, pretty much enforced its that basically said, no, we're not going to listen to anything and we're keeping you. And it was like it had nothing to do but the difference between that and Scotland would be Scotland would leave legal like quote unquote legally, and the UK wouldn't stop them.
Yes, that would be the difference.
Okay. Anyway, talking too much about this, I apologize to all the people out there. We're supposed to talk about books, and I do have a book I wanted to talk about today. Okay, let me do this the right way, because this is a big this is not a big deal for me, but it was one of those nice things that came up recently, and I kind of want to give it the best framing. So there is a writer named Becky Chambers. So Becky Chambers wrote a book called The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. Now, Becky Chambers does not write normal novels. The small way, the long way to a small angry planet is not a normal novel. It's the first in a sort of loosely connected series called The Wayfarers, and it's about Rosemary Harper, who joins the crew of the Wayfarer. And originally, I believe the book was like published similar to the way Pirates was. It was either a fan fiction or something that was published, and then it was put up, and then it was. It is the exact opposite of all of the terrible apocalyptic fiction that is out there today. Not terrible in the way that it's bad, it's just like depressing. It is just about a person making decisions in their life in a sci-fi setting. And it explores a lot of what it means to be a person, to stand up for yourself. Explores small stories, and there isn't a big dramatic like war or conflict or massive thing happening. It's just people. And I loved it. And a lot of people will grow out of the, and yes, it is slice of life. Let's be real. It's slice of life. It's slice of life in a sci-fi setting, and I love it, and I loved all of the books that she's come out with because oftentimes they are like such personalized explorations of philosophy and self, and a little self-indulgent at times, and people don't necessarily love that. But if you are a lover of books that are calm and like they reach out to you on a personal level, and they're like characterizations, and they're just very chill books, you will love this.
It seems interesting. Like I do kind of like that sort of feel of a story that's about just what it is to live your life in a world different from our own.
Yeah, and it's just about what it is to grow up. So in the setting in the one that Becky Chambers writes, Earth has been abandoned as uninhabitable. And there is like and people sort of fled the planet, and there's a group of humans on Mars, and then everybody else is on spaceships, and they it's an entirely it's a very I guess a what am I looking for? Like, oh God, I hate saying progressive book. That's the right word I'm looking for. Is it's a very progressive book. It deals with relationships in a very progressive way, and I appreciated this. That's all. I'm trying not to do spoilers or anything. I just want to say that it's just a calming book and nice to read. If you ever want to read it, try the Wayfarer series or Becky Chambers' more recent novel series, The Monk and the Robot novellas, which is a fascinating exploration of what would happen if people like developed if AI tech AIs developed but then decided to leave humanity alone in their own little corner and then just decided to become part of the cycle of the world, and instead of developing into the massive evil thing, like it's just
What if
very,
AI
very
just
cool.
kind of went about its life and didn't bother us and we didn't bother them?
Exactly, essentially. And then what it means to live as an AI, and what it means to like for humans to suddenly realize we created this life and the life decided not to hang out with us, and like the existential crisis that they go through, and how they give up unnecessary technology and become less like dependent on stuff. And then what happens when the robots come, one of the robots come back out of the woods to see if humans needed anything.
Less dependent on stuff. Stuff is fine. Stuff is not the problem. Everybody wants to talk about we need to be less dependent on stuff. No, stuff is great. Stuff lets me, like, explore worlds and cultures and places I'll never be able to see, all from like exactly where I am in the comfort of nice air conditioning with food that has been seasoned at a degree that would cause my ancient ancestors from 2,000 years ago
That,
to die
yeah,
from
but
sheer envy, right? Stuff is.
that's not the stuff I'm referring to. Like, you don't need a, what do they call it? You don't need a $500,000 yacht to do what you're talking
I mean, a $500,000 yacht would be really nice, though.
about.
Like, a
But, oh,
$500,000 yacht would sound like a great way to enjoy fishing and, like, take all my friends out for a party.
couldn't you do that without the $500,000 yacht in right now?
No, because boats, even a cheap boat's expensive.
Aha! And what if you lived in a world where it was possible for you to do stuff without it being expensive? Because there's not a lot of stuff and you don't have to
I mean,
spend the money.
that sounds like sounds a lot like a fantastical post-scarcity society. I'm sure humanity will get there eventually.
Anyway. Oh, by the way, I looked it up. I forgot to say this, but so the reason I got really excited about it was because The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet was published in 2014, and she did it by running a Kickstarter. She self-published her first novel.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I thought it was really cool, and I remember reading it way back when, and then I kept going with it because it was such a, chill, fun, like, read. It won a bunch of rewards, and like it was, sorry, it didn't win a bunch of rewards. It got nominated for a bunch of rewards. And it got pretty far, and yeah, here we are.
It does sound interesting. I will probably check it out eventually. I've got a list, most of which is actually being taken up by anime right now.
What anime?
It's going to be a great season for anime. Among other things, there's a new Gundam, and Gundam is
Oh,
Gundam, so Gundam is great, Gundam is good, giant robots are awesome, and this one even is getting mainstream attention because lesbians.
I heard a lot about the Gundam stuff, also because there's a new game out, like a
A
arena
couple.
game.
That's
Yeah, arena game for Gumball,
Gundam. Well, it's
Gundam.
got a Overwatch hero style shooter called Gundam Evolve that has been really fun. I thought it was just going to be a soulless cash grab, and I was going to play it anyways because, me, Gundam, yes. But it actually turned out to be a real game, so that has been a enjoyable surprise. Also, it had a more arena-like third-person-y new SD Gundam type game that came out. But no, the new ones, which for Mercury, which is the new anime season, first one in like 7 years since Iron-Blooded Orphans, and I'm just a tiny bit mad about it's getting all
What?
this great press for how gay it is, but Iron-Blooded Orphans was hella gay. Iron-Blooded Orphans was omega gay. There was an entire long-running subplot about two guys in a sort of will they won't they romantic relationship.
Okay.
One of the main male leads, the response to being hit on by a woman is to look at her and say, "I don't like women." And the two main female leads end in a gay marriage. And nobody showed up for Iron-Blooded Orphans, the best Gundam series in decades that I can never get anybody to talk about because everybody skipped
First
it.
off, stop it. First off, I don't know who this everybody is, but I have seen in every anime list I've seen and everything everybody's like I've seen in the recent like last 2 years, whenever they even mention Gundam, first thing they mention is Iron-Blooded Orphans. So I think you just aren't running with the right crowd. And two, look. Sometimes queer stuff doesn't get as much notice when it's, good. Like, look at what happened with the. Okay, don't. This is not my endorsement of this movie, but you've seen the shit that's been going on with the Bros movie?
Oh, yeah, I was considering going to see that, but the creator put me off of it. The director guy.
Director guy? What do you. You mean the main actor?
Whoever it is on Twitter that's been screaming that if you don't go to watch it, you're a homophobe. Like, I like Dick. I'm all about Dick. If that's your best pitch for your movie, I have better things to do with my money.
You mean Billy Eichner? Okay. I don't know if Billy Eichner's been the one that's been doing it on Twitter, but I don't believe he has. He's not that guy.
Somebody has. I know it was somebody involved in like the. Anyways, go on, go on, go on, move on.
In any case, he, the dude's just, he has a very particular kind of humor that doesn't necessarily mesh with everybody, but the movie itself was badly timed and is in a genre that's mostly appeals to women. It's a rom-com that's being released on near Halloween. So what I'm saying is, Iron-Blooded Orphans might have been the best. It just didn't come out at the right time, so there wasn't enough attention on it. Make sense?
No, I get what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's just a little bit frustrating because that did not get a lot of press. It did not get talked about much. The most that it got was a nod in the anime award things Crunchyroll did, which sadly the voting for that came through before one of the best fights in the second season came out. So it didn't even like get the good fight. Nobody voted for it. I'm just saying, people slept on it. Yes, it shows up in lists and stuff, but anyways, it was really good and I really liked it. Witch from Mercury is basically going to be Revolutionary Girl Eutina, but they're replacing a lot of the deep philosophy and metaphor with giant robots, so.
Yeah, I it's fair.
And I am like, that sentence I just said made me deeply excited, and actually, as soon as we're done with this, I'm going to go and watch the new episode. Like, hype. But there's
I
also Chainsaw Man, which is going to be having its episode come out. I think it. I need to double check. I know it's coming out this season. I can't remember if it's out. I have completely lost track of what day it is. Feels like it's only halfway through the year. New season of Spy X Family.
Oh my God, yes. But has it already started?
I believe,
I
yeah,
think.
I believe that the second season has just started, or just
Yeah,
starting.
I haven't kept up because I wanted to. I knew I was gonna like wait a few episodes to start because waiting every week for like the dose of Spy X Family was not fun for me. Because it's such a like, it's not really. I don't know why, but it doesn't feel like an episodic thing. It feels like a binge watch, and yet they made it episodic.
You see,
I don't know.
that seems weird to me because I always think of it as being like this perfect episodic slice of life show. Like it harkens back to that era of like you could set up a perpetual plot where you don't have to move the story forward more than a tiny bit here or there, and you can kind of keep your status quo forever, and it's so well balanced, and the tension is so great that you can kind of do it as long as you need to. Like Detective Conan, right? It kind of makes me think of that, and I think of it as being very episodic.
Okay. For me, sorry, that okay wasn't dismissive. I'm reading something. I was trying to find a news story that I read recently to talk about, but I've been derailed by this. Did you know Hocus Pocus 2 came out?
Yeah, I'm exceedingly hyped for that.
I can't believe you haven't seen it?
I've had a lot going on.
You have oh, I am flabbergasted. I am gobsmacked. I am very disappointed in you. That's all I will say. I watched it the day it came out. And I will say that the parts. Okay, here's my critique of the film. There were too much of the kids, too little witches. I just wanted more of the Sanderson sisters fucking around, because that was the highlight of the movie for me. Of course, it's a kids movie, so there was a lot more, kids growing up, whatever the fuck that is. I don't want to watch babies. Babies are not important to me.
You do realize that this is a movie for
No.
children, right?
No. Gays are the ones who are watching this. Children are not. And the only reason children are watching it is because the gays are annoying their parents into watching it, who force their children to watch it. That's how it worked. There should have been more Sanderson sisters and less, children growing up and learning to be themselves and be friends. I don't fucking know what the hell that was. I was too busy watching Bette Midler, Kathy Najimy, and Sarah Jessica Parker fuck it up on the screen. Like that, like in a good way. Like that was a lot of fun. It was just a lot of fun.
Oh,
Kathy Najimy has some of the best line readings I have ever. She's just so good. Like every word that comes out of her mouth is just perfectly timed, and she knows, and it just hits your funny bone. I
don't
just
take
love
this
her.
the wrong way.
What?
You're old.
I am old. Give me a break. I've said that before. What is wrong
Oh,
with you?
okay. I'm just saying because, like, you've got this whole thing on how, the kid. This isn't for the kids. This is for me. No. That movie is for the kids. It is
Am
decidedly
rec
a
children.
children's movie.
Children ruin everything. I am taking it back. I'm reclaiming it from the children. Okay? They don't need it. They don't need witches. They got, I don't know, bunnies or whatever the fuck they have.
That's a terrible lie, and you know it. Children absolutely need witches.
Excuse me. Okay, so now that I've embarrassed myself with Hocus Pocus 2, I've forgotten what I was going to talk to you about that was so important. Like, oh, yeah, Chris Pratt's Mario voice. That's what I was looking
I
for.
need to hear more of that voice before I can form a definitive opinion.
That's
We
not
got.
even the thing. That's not even the thing I wanted to show you. So somebody on Twitter, like, made a post with the voice, and do you know Bob's Burgers?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know the wife?
Yeah.
Yeah. So somebody made a post with the wife. Okay, I have to show you this. By the way, I did not watch the trailer because I didn't want my life ruined. But this has made sure that I will never watch it.
Like, the trailer was actually really good. Like, it had a very solid sense of humor. Like, most of the voices felt on point. Like, Jack Black's Bowser looks like he is going to be hilarious. It's just Chris Pratt. I'm not even, like, really particularly mad about him. I just don't feel like he's right for it. And I need to hear more of that voice before I form a real opinion.
I'm just saying, listen, look at that video. It's the YouTube version of the thing that was on Twitter, but
Yeah,
essentially it's
I
Linda.
watched it. I mean, yeah, I get it. It sounds a little Linda-y when, like, you put it like that.
I as soon as I saw that, I know for a fact that either I'm going to spend the entire movie laughing my ass off every time Mario opens his mouth, or I don't watch the movie, one or the other, because I don't think I'm gonna be able to live with that voice. I now it's like a glass shattered moment where it's just impossible for me to miss it. Okay. Anyway, Chris Pratt, we're moving on.
Yeah,
Still there?
no, I'm here. I'm just trying to think because there was something. Oh, yeah. So I found out recently that Naomi Novik, the Temeraire author, had a new like series out because I know she had done like a couple standalone books. And I read one of them. I keep meaning to read the other, but she's got like a whole new series called the
Yeah.
Skullamance trilogy, and I've read the first one, and I was reading it, and I was about halfway through thinking to myself, God, this is just something about this feels just like bad, and then it clicked that I was reading a really like good author who very clearly has a lot of experience in the realm of fan fiction culture, writing the like most dead on point, absolutely accurate parody of like this overly dark, hilariously grim, dark comedy Harry Potter fan fiction. And then it clicked for me, and it's now like my favorite book that I've read all year.
First off, how did you miss that Skullamance came out? Second, Lynette got to see her. Did you know?
No, I did not.
So Lynette went to do a book signing, and I think she had a hyperventilating moment where she was like, "There's no way I'm gonna be able to stand next to Naomi Novak without turning into a she's gonna kill me Hopefully she doesn't kill into a blubbering mess. And I was like, take your hubby with you as a translator. That way you can cry and then he can translate your words, because you know your partner usually can translate through the blubbering because you have to learn.
I can't even judge Lynette. I once bumped into Misha Collins in an elevator at Dragon Con, and I spent I sprung an air leak. That's the only way I can think of to describe it. It was like the fucking 12-year-old girl squealing because fucking NSYNC is on stage, only it was higher pitched and it took longer. And then I just kind of nodded and said I'm a huge fan, and then he said cool, and then he left. Like, sometimes you meet people and they're famous and they're awesome and you just look silly.
I don't know. It was one of those moments where I'm reminded that I live in a very unique city, because yes, I was I'm from New York story. I don't think I freak out as much as other people. I'm like, oh, hey, look that. Then like I move on. I guess if I had to have a conversation with somebody that I really admired, but I don't think there's a lot of people that like freak me out like that. Yeah, I don't think there are a lot of people that freak me out like that. I can't think of anybody.
Maybe.
Speaking of
And I will say, Oshi, I commend your restraint for making it this far in before having what I think is your first I'm from New York story.
I hate you. Anyway, so we're gonna talk about somebody else that's from another place that's really cool. The doctor.
Yeah, Geneva Scala, because like this series definitely has some interesting examples of nominative determinism, but I actually think that Geneva manages to be more blatant than Aaron Solstice, and Aaron Solstice is already such a remarkably on the nose name, and then Geneva somehow managed to one up it.
I get. I mean, I wasn't really thinking about the significance of her name for a very long time. I think Pyre just put names into a like name generator and went like, give me two names.
No, I do not believe that. Like, okay, I'm not joking. There is a really, like, especially for the earlier couple of volumes, a great deal of, like, that sort of nominative determinism. You can look at a character's name and then look at their character arc and realize that it was actually, like, pretty obviously telegraphed to you who they were going to be through their name. Like, I don't think Pirate just makes them up. I think they're putting real thought into it.
All right, well, we'll just ask Pirate. I'll leave him a question in their next AMA. Just as an aside, I've met now three people who did not hear about the AMA. It's genuinely bugging me that when we did the like the AMA happened and we had hundreds and hundreds of people come, and there's still people who don't know that the AMA happened.
Listen, you can put the word out, you can yell it from the top of the mountaintops and scream it from the rooftops and dance on the streetlights, and somebody is still going to not be looking up from their phone.
Anyway, yeah, you're right. But for okay, so for volume three, there were two chapters specific to Geneva, and they came in an I think there were like a small pause in the normal progression of the volume. I think Pirate did them as pull chapters originally, and what?
I'll say I don't remember if it was a poll or not, but it is interesting because it maintains that thing that you see sometimes from other side characters, where it went to 1.00 Doctor for D instead of keeping the normal numbering.
Okay, I just realized there was a spelling error in the chapter and now it's bugging me. I'm sorry, I was looking at the reference notes and going back and forth and I was trying to find out if if it was a chapter. Yeah, it was the side story for July 22nd. And that was they published it on the 14th. And then it released it to the public on the 17th. Excuse me. Yeah, and it was a two-parter, and the story is fairly the two-parter is fairly straightforward. Geneva Scala appears in a battlefield on in Ballaros, where two companies, two mercenary companies, whose names I forget right now because I'm me, are fighting. One is a centaur focused one, and one is like a mixed company with a lot of Dillahans. And they are having a very brutal battle between the two of them that ends up being like so destructive, and so many people are dying, and they're fighting over this, I think it was a valley. And Geneva ends up in the middle of it, and she's like, yeah, this kid who doesn't know why she's here, and then she starts doing the only
So,
thing that matters. Wait, sorry, go ahead.
I think it is hard for me to think of Geneva as a, like I just I could never think of the words like this kid the way that I could for like Ryoka or Eren with Geneva.
That is true. You're right. Geneva's not a kid. I should take that back. What I mean to say is Geneva is this adult woman. She truly is an adult woman because she's like early on, it's very well established that she was in med school when she
Yeah.
got here.
Like
She
she's
was
trapped in another world with her unfinished medical license. Like
right. Not my medical. Let's be real. She hasn't done her residency. She's nowhere near like a trained doctor, but she has the basic understanding that comes with going to medical school. I don't think Pirate quite knew at the time, or maybe they did know at the time, or they researched it. But if you're in med school, it means you're learning like anatomy and the basic tools of like suturing, and you're cutting up bodies so you can learn where all the parts are. The actual day-to-day training that lets you become a doctor happens during your residency. And that's what she lacks. She doesn't have any of the practical experience. She only has the theoretical one. And the most she's done is work on cadavers, is my understanding.
My understanding is that she was like at the very tail end or like on her way out of med school but hadn't quite started residency yet.
Yeah. And
Which,
that also. Go
oh,
ahead.
go on.
I was going to say that also brings up the interesting point that she's significantly older than anybody else that we've been introduced to who's coming from Earth, right?
Yeah.
I think, generally speaking, yeah.
Which is why defaulting to like thinking of her as being young of everyone else is such an easy mistake to make. She really is like at one end of a bell curve here. And it shows, I think, in some ways, but in other ways, she is probably one of the most naive and idealistic characters that we've come through, despite her age. Like, she has this really like idealistic like I'm sure what's the word I'm looking for here? Philosophy, code, like bail me out here, Oshi, I'm drowning.
I got nothing. I don't know where you're going with
Well,
this.
no, she is an incredibly idealistic character. She gets
Right.
trapped in this other world and like she winds up with swearing this the Hippocratic Oath, and she gets the class doctor, and by
Wait,
God.
before we even go get to that point, I wanted to talk a lot about where she appears because I think this is the first time outside of, I think, the mentions of Nears that we see Balaros.
Oh, true, you're right.
That's what I wanted to talk about before we get started with like discussing her development. Geneva appears, I think the quote from the first chapter is, Geneva had walked into a city built onto the side of a lake. She'd stared around at the tall buildings, the interconnected bridges that ran overhead, and most especially at the walking lizard people and the centaurs that walked around next to humans. She's the first human that, like, I know Eren appeared in Drakelands and but she genuinely appears in a place that's. There's no way to say that this is anything close to, like, Earth. She's at a city near a. Like, there are centaurs around. It's.
Out of all the places to wind up, Balaros so far feels like the one that is truly the most alien culturally. Like, yeah, like, you have an entire city full of dragon people who are bipedal, and those are the Drakes, and that's a whole thing. But they still, like, the culture, the environment, it still does not feel like that far off. But
The
Balaris.
caveat, wait, we should caveat this. This is because she's American.
Yeah.
If she,
Although.
if you were from a different part of the world,
Well.
it wouldn't be that weird.
Well, no, I'm not even saying, like, what I'm trying to say is, like, Balaros does not feel like it lines up easily with any other part of the world, though.
That's true. That's,
Like.
well, no, again, this is where, if I was from, say, Malaysia, Thailand, Cambodia, maybe the Philippines, it wouldn't be that weird.
I don't know. I really can't think of anywhere that's culturally quite like what Belarus is like, and it's almost, God, you know what I just realized? The way that, like, the entire continent is run by overly large military corporations makes it almost feel like cyberpunk, but, you know, dungeon punky.
Yeah, is that that's yeah, okay. So yeah, so she ends up in Balaros in this weird environment. She doesn't know what she's doing. She recognizes that she's somewhere where things are different. She even meets a minotaur, and one of the first experiences she has in this world after she's settled up just a little bit is that she meets a group of mercenaries who are recruiting.
Yeah, which, well, I mean, meets. I suppose that she was actively seeking them out because she was going to starve to death.
Yeah, pretty much. And she claims to have the doctor's class, and then yeah, she gets recruited so she doesn't starve.
Yeah, and it seems interesting because, like, the concept of a doctor and the doctor as its own standalone class, different from just being a healer, gets mentioned. And it's, you know, vague and rare, and it's a world where, you know, healing potions exist, so there's probably limited utility. But yeah, no, it's like, even the guy mentions, you know, that there are uses for people with those kind of skills, and Geneva eventually finds every single one of them.
So I found it fascinating right away to see how there is no doctors, because it implies like there are healers but not doctors. So that division implies a lack of education and a lack of interest in developing a structured approach to healing the body that doesn't involve magic so much.
Yeah, well, it's a lack of institutional education. I
That's
imagine that, like, you know, from point A to point B, an apprenticeship type system that keeps healers going makes sense in, like, its own weird way, and probably passes along a decent amount of knowledge, but it's all going to be compartmentalized and spread out and
That's
a lot
true,
of
but
bad data.
you have to think about doctors in our world too. Like, doctors as a profession, a lot of what they're professing about doctors as they know them, they're like crazy and they cut people open. This is the same kind of prejudice that existed for doctors before they became as quite as ubiquitous and trusted as they are today, right? And even today, there's a lot of like stigma against doctors from certain communities for sometimes very qualified reasons. I mean, black people, we all know what happens to black people who get treated by the wrong kind of doctors in the US. There is a lot of stigma with the class. There is a lot of superstition around it because people don't understand it. And it took hundreds of years for us to develop the kind of knowledge base for people to understand some of what doctors do. And the lack of it in this world and in this context, especially with mercenary companies, leads me to think that it had we I had a huge discussion about this on the Discord way long time ago, and the conclusion basically was that the world is like top heavy, in that the people at the top, the ones with the levels and the magic and the stuff, they can cure themselves and fix themselves with all of these magical solutions, so they discourage the growth of non-magical solutions because they're the ones with all the resources and they see no reason in investing in things like mundane solutions that they have magical ones for. So why find a way to cut and ever train people to cut arrows out of your stomach and prevent them from harming you, how am I going to kill people if I don't have ever cut arrows? Why would I lessen my power like that?
I only think that, like, it's because the basic idea of cut open the wound and pull the arrow out, or at least try to, is like the kind of common sense thing that I imagine that somebody with the healer class would also be trying to do. It's
Well, I
just.
don't know that. The thing is, common sense for us isn't common sense for them. Even the most basic of things for healers is based around a lot around their skills and their abilities and the knowledge base that they have. They may not believe that cutting people open is necessarily the best way to do things. They may think that the best way to get rid of an Evercut arrow is literally to cut off the wound and regenerate the fucking arm.
I mean, considering the, that's like such an extreme solution dependent on like such rare and powerful regenerative stuff. And I mean, yeah, if you have an Evercut arrow and it's in like the flesh of your bicep, you could probably cut that area out and fill it in with like a healing potion, and that would be better. But no, like you cut open and go in and grab the thing and pull it out is like the kind of step one that I imagine a panicking peasant with an Evercut wound would probably try and go for. So I imagine that anybody with an even like base it, yes, common sense is relative, but there's common sense and then there's common sense, Oshi.
But so Geneva experiences the induction into the mercenary company, and as desperate as she is, she makes an oath, like you were saying. She needed all of these things and she doesn't have them, and she's like shocked. She's being pressed into using her skills as a doctor, except she's not really a doctor by her own measurements, and she does not have any tools. She doesn't have any of the surgical tools that this I'm you know how much stuff a hospital needs. I know someone personally. Just to sterilize equipment, they have an entire department of people who literally steam and disinfect every single tool that every single doctor does use, and then put them into like perfectly sealed environments so they could be reused. Like the le even the clothes, the things, everything needed. Hospitals are a wonder of the system that we've built on Earth, and here is Geneva with none of that, and she has to become a doctor. And she, instead of making like she makes an oath, right? And this oath is based on her own ideals. And just like you were saying, she's an idealistic person. At the start of her story, we hear about the fact that what got her started on trying to become a doctor is that she couldn't save a gerbil that was dying, that she considered a friend. And to her, that was a crime that was unspeakable, or at least in my mind, that's how I interpreted it as. And it started her on the path to become a doctor. And that's, I'm gonna
Yeah,
be
and
honest.
she loves and values life to a powerful degree, and that only gets more apparent like when like the story goes what I've always mentally called this the MASH portion of the series, or the not the series but the MASH portion of the story. Because the whole time that she's going through like this desperate post-healing potion battle, trying to sew people together in these endless waves, just this fighting this never-ending battle against death, I could not stop hearing Hawkeye from MASH just cracking off jokes. But
And
Geneva is too idealistic to like crack the jokes, and thus it just builds and builds and builds up in her.
yeah, and I remember the speaking of Hawkeye, you remember the episode where he finally breaks too?
Yeah.
Yeah, like
Well, a
he
couple,
Jesus.
really.
Oh, more than a few. Yeah, you're right. There's more than, but the second I saw that, all I could think is that when she started her residency, the doctors around her would have known just how idealistic it was, and they would have done everything possible to like force her to confront that and learn some kind of like distance to distance herself a little bit,
That
because otherwise she's not gonna make it.
That comes naturally through residency, right? If we,
Yeah.
if in part because, you know, it's way lower stakes than war, like by a like order of magnitude. Yes, well,
Well,
yes, people are going to die, and yes, it's, you know, it matters, but like the scale and the speed and the weight of the deaths, the ability to like decompress between the power of an active support structure and
yeah.
networking and mentors, like that's the type of thing where somebody like Geneva could learn to healthily channel this fury she has at the concept of death and to work to do and be a healthier person with it. Instead, she is put into a pressure cooker, it is turned up to maximum, and like, you know, then somebody, when she finally does start to reach a point where she is getting ahead of the curve and actually really honest to God doing it, people try to murder her for it.
No, not try. They do.
True.
She's so close to death, and the only thing that saves her is this very not selfed creature that we all know they're parasites, and this is like the first time we get to see the truth of it, and it's just like she's
I
barely showing
think this
on.
is like we're gonna have to talk about selfies for a minute, because this is pretty much where they get introduced.
Yeah. What do you talk about?
This I don't think that we had seen like have to have
Did you forget somebody?
well, and I for some reason I keep thinking that that somebody shows up later this volume.
No, remember it. The Half Seekers
Yeah,
is
the
what I'm talking
Chulakwa with the
about.
Half Seekers. I could have sworn the Half Seekers got to the end this volume.
I thought they were out in volume two.
They might be. I don't know which one of us is right.
Remember during the party? Remember that everybody comes to the inn and Jalak was defending Leonette from the Gnolls, and there's a brawl and the Half Seekers show up.
Okay, you're right. Okay, I like just completely misplaced where Jalakwa and the Half Seekers enter the story.
Yeah,
I you know
okay.
that's life with the Wandering Inn.
Yeah, okay. But
But
the so the
yeah,
So
no,
the selfie
we
says.
but we do find out at least one interesting detail about Selfids. They
They can appear.
Oh,
They
go on.
can fix spinal injuries and keep you alive.
Yeah, well, one, yeah, they can act as a second nervous system. They can be in existence in conjunction with another human being and enable them. But I was thinking it's the fact that like they can take the kind of permanent injury that not Jalakwa, this Selfid takes, where
Okasha.
Okasha, right? Like it's basically just like a giant amoeba blob, but yet when she is wounded, she still does not have the ability to use an arm, right?
Like
Like
she lost a physical part of her, just like with humans losing pieces of themselves and not being able to function. Like if you lose a limb, they losing a piece of herself meant that she was not able to functionally regrow that piece. She's not some kind of regenerative blob. She is an actual fully realized creature, and you can physically harm that creature, and that creature can then lose parts of
yeah,
functionality.
well, that's just, it's fascinating to me what that says about their biology, that like despite appearing to be mostly homogeneous, that there is something like a nervous system and like that kind of permanent damage can hit. I don't know, that seemed, it's different to me from how you would expect selfies to work, and it stands out in a good way.
Yeah. For me, mostly, I just focus on the parallels between Geneva and Le we just had another chapter, Laken, because Laken also did, like, when both of them that gain their class, when they do, like, they take an action. For Laken, it was, like, literally saying that I am an emperor and I have decided I would be an emperor and then getting the emperor class. Here, it's Geneva making an actual oath. Like she takes a moment to make an oath, and because It's connected to the gaining of her class. And this is very significant because I don't think we've ever seen another class that happens in this particular way. And in the chapter, it's actually confirmed in the text that if she ever broke her oath, she would lose her class.
Yeah, it's because she didn't get the class until she swore that oath, because Geneva did not think of herself as a doctor until she was bound by that oath to life.
I don't know if it was because the like, first off, the class isn't something new, so I think that this is something that's inherent to the class itself. I don't think it genuinely required Geneva to think of herself as a doctor. I think it really might be that all she has to do is be willing to take the oath, and maybe that's how you gain the class.
So doctor feels to me like the kind of class that you should probably upgrade or consolidate into, but I think that she goes straight into doctor because she already has that advanced knowledge, and she already has, she's probably, way more qualified than probably the average person who is already a doctor, just by virtue of, having come from the institutional learning system with hundreds of years of benefit. I mean, hundreds of years of knowledge to benefit from. And I don't think that the average every doctor is going to have to swear and be bound by that oath. Like, if for nothing else, like, even in modern times, the Hippocratic Oath is actually outdated. There's a whole different oath now, and, like, I don't think the system would require one, but I think it helps. And in Geneva's mind and in the place that she's in, I don't think that that class exists for her without the
Okay,
oath.
that's not what I mean. Let me rephrase this. I think the system has something within it where it recognizes when somebody does something like make an oath or make a declaration, and that is the qualifying nature of how you get a certain class. And that was one of the theories that was floating around when we were having discussions about
Oh
the
yeah, no,
doctor test.
I agree with that. I just don't think it's true for doctors.
Okay,
Yeah,
well,
that's what I'm
yeah.
saying. Like, I don't think every doctor has to swear an oath. But I agree that that's probably a real thing.
And I think because the class itself reinforces the oath, that perhaps she gains something from that oath. Like maybe some protection, maybe some special ability, I don't know. And that does imply some things about how the system works, right?
Yeah, although here the pirate is a tiny bit of a weeb. This is a known and established true fact. I don't know if pirate is familiar with Hunter Hunter or not, but in there was something. It's not unique to that, but it's old, which means it's one of the better early examples, like clear examples of this, where you have a limitation. And you, because you have clearly set a limitation on yourself, you can make your powers kind of better, right? Like, there's an entire character who 90% of the time is just particularly smart and good in a fight because he is so goddamn laser focused on one particular organization that most of his powers don't work. And if he gets into a fight with anyone from that organization, he practically just wins. And, or actually, for a more recent example with Jujutsu Kaisen, where you actually are rewarded for monologuing and explaining to your opponent how your powers work, and it makes them stronger because that is, in a way, a kind of binding oath. I think Geneva levels probably gets better levels faster. It is considered by the system to be, on hard mode, so to speak, because she has sworn this fairly restrictive oath
Okay.
to, like, she's sworn this fairly restrictive oath to make her life actually kind of that much harder.
Yeah. And I would agree. That's probably what it is. For I guess the other aspect of the chapters that I really wanted to talk about was it's oh God, there's no way around it. It's super dark, man.
Yeah,
Like
like
this.
God, so to quote MASH, because I cannot get MASH out of my brain for just this whole volume, there are certain rules about war. And rule number one is that young men die. And rule number two is that doctors can't change rule number one. But
And
nobody
that,
ever told Geneva either of those rules.
or maybe they did, but she didn't really pay attention. What I really want to get at with the darkness of the chapter is that Pirate did quite a bit of research, I think, to set this all up. And the structure of the story is just super like dark in that there is no good solution to any of this. She joins a company, she ends up in this horrific fight. She becomes this symbol of healing. She chooses to be neutral. She makes no choices. She heals everybody. And despite all of that, the brutality continues. The blood keeps spilling, and she's still part of all of this. I mean, there's nothing to do here. Like, there's no solution here. Even in victory, they weren't able to like stop the violence. It just keeps going. And for someone like Geneva, it's got to be devastating to go through all of that, right?
That's like
And then you see her like experience all of this, and you go through the visceral aspects of it, and a lot of people, I promise there was a point to this, a lot of people were turned off. They don't necessarily find Geneva that interesting because it's such a dark story and it doesn't have really have any surprises or any light to it. And that, I thought that was interesting to point out that the pirate is capable of writing in a different space, and that capability came out in this chapter.
Oh yeah, it definitely is not like so here's the thing. I feel like there is, even as dark as this got, a core like seed, just this one single little burning coal of optimism with like this last light of Balaros at the end, with like the implications, you know, Geneva has or is going to wind up taking a place of like an almost mythical stature as like this comforting presence in this place that's torn apart constantly by war, constantly just doing everything she can to try and, you know, win that fist fight against death. Oh my God, I just had like the we gotta talk after this. I just had this great fucking mental image. But
Okay.
it's totally a spoiler. Can't talk about it.
Okay. Well, since we're talking about ending this after this, we're on time, I think. We're a couple of minutes over, but okay. I don't really want to dive any deeper into Geneva because Geneva does. I don't even mind spoiling this part. Geneva comes back eventually, and there are more stories from her, and I'm gonna dig deeper into her character and everything when those particular chapter comes up. But in the meantime, thank you so much for listening to us ramble on about our personal lives and opinions on things, and discussing Geneva. What did you think of Geneva when, sorry, I'll start that again. What did you, dear readers, readers? Okay, starting that again. What did you, dear listeners, think of Geneva when you first experienced her story? What did you think of the side story, and did you? Were you affected by it? Did you reject it? Did you think it was too much? Email us, DM us, tell us on Twitter, whatever the hell it is. And we'll see you next time. Say bye, Dragnus.
See you next time, true believers.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins.
Edited by Liquid Ender.
The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at No Killing Goblin or email us at nokillinggoblins with an S at gmail.com.